We do plan these podcasts out. We plan them out by theme.
We're planners. And so, like, I do not consider this planning. This is like, here's a word. This is what we're going with. These are some ideas or topics we want to hit on. And then just go with it.
This morning, you came to me and you said, okay, we're going to film today. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about again today? Because you knew that I had already thought of something. You just forgot what it was.
Yeah.
And I said, trash. Today, we're talking about trash.
Yeah.
Garbage, waste, litter.
Actual trash, you guys. Not, not in the figurative sense of the word. Like, take these women out here are trash. These men out here are trash.
So precisely to my point, why I wanted to talk about trash today is because as soon as we started talking about it the other day, mm-hmm. I became increasingly fascinated with the etymology of it, the history of it, and I just got to Googling.
Yeah, you were sending me the history of sanitization.
So one of the first things I found out about trash, which was shocking to me, the concept of trash started around 500 BC. That is before Christ. Mm. I'm always fascinated by this timeline here. The Greek city of Athens devised one of the first known regulations regarding trash. So it basically told its residents that they were forbidden from throwing trash, waste, mm-hmm. in the streets. And instead, they would have to transport it to dump it a mile from the city.
What trash did they have back then? Just
like food waste.
So like they're walking down the street.
They would throw it out their windows, right?
Right.
Like human waste too. They would do that.
Mm-hmm.
This was shocking to me because I thought that the U.S. had just introduced regulations a couple decades ago.
Oh, no.
No.
Like,
not like that.
Regulations? Like,
but like street regulations. Because you
like no littering on the street.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I was just shocked that this regulation was so specific, literally 500 BC, and then the U.S. is just establishing its no trash in street laws.
Yeah.
And I don't think some states even have it still.
If you litter, there's a fine.
Yeah.
Not everyone has it. But, you know, it's interesting you say that because obviously there was a problem, right, that they felt they wanted to handle. Their solution to solve their problem was don't throw it out on your street. Don't throw it out of your house. Can you just throw it a couple miles?
Yes.
Down the road, just so we don't see it.
Yeah.
Just so it's not in sight.
I'm also reading that they had issues implementing this. So they created a job. They called them scavengers, which would help this process.
Is that like garbage?
Essentially.
Like
garbage, yeah, what we now know today is garbage pickers.
So basically, we've, as a society today, as a modern society, we've come up with no new concept.
Yeah, and in fact, we're declining because we've created no new concepts, and the problems are becoming
backwards.
Greater and greater and greater. A city in Japan, I know not all cities in Japan, I think it was maybe a smaller one, they actually have to take all their trash, so their organic waste, the recycling, they separate it into three piles, and then they take it to these bins where they actually have to weigh each pile of trash before they dispose it in these bins. And then they pay on site per kilo of whatever trash they have. And I found that to be really interesting because essentially we have the same thing here in Canada. It's just a little bit further removed from the person because we pay it through our taxes.
The system has this faith in us to actually organize your recycling to, like, is it paper recycling? Is it plastic recycling? Is it garbage and then compost?
This country, for some reason, trusts us to be good Samaritans.
Yeah, but like, on what basis? I have no idea. I really, really don't know.
I think they do fine you, though, if they find out that you haven't been recycling.
How do they find out? They open your garbage?
I don't know, but I know that they have fines in place for these things, right?
Ooh. See, I know some cities in Ontario will fine you if you have, like, more than one black bag of garbage.
Yeah.
How do they know what I got in that garbage bag? Oh, is there a scanner at the garbage place? Oh, like, this house, this garbage bag belongs to X house. And
I don't know those details. I think probably part of their process is just to instill fear in us,
right,
and trust that we'll be fearful enough of the consequences that we just do a good job,
right?
But yeah, I don't think that they can, unless it's something extremely large that you're caught throwing away, like, I don't think they can attribute it back to one specific house.
It gets taught to us at a very young age, doesn't it? Like,
from
the minute you're in school, like kindergarten.
In grade 5, my class went on a day trip to the landfill and recycling depot. That was a day trip in grade 5. I remember this because I've told this story to multiple people and they always laugh. And I'm like, I don't know. Was it just our school? I don't.
It definitely wasn't ours.
It was disgusting.
Did you take a thick 10? First of all, I'm surprised parents would even allow that, because I'd be like, my child is going to get sick.
Yeah.
Because
First of all, I think a lot of things were different back then.
Yeah.
I just heard this girl talking about how in grade 1, if you got top of your class, you got to, and this was something that parents signed off on, you got to ride on the principal's motorcycle to an ice cream shop that day and get ice cream with the principal. A grade 1. Strapped on the back of it. And this was a real thing. And she went to her mom. She's like, did I remember this correctly? She's like, yes. Times were different.
Times were so different. I'm trying to think, though. We grew up in a very particular era where we can still relate to the younger. We still have habits and interests that align with the younger generation. But we also experience some of this stuff. When did you get your first cell phone, for example?
I think it was just at the beginning of university, actually. Like, tail end of high school, beginning of university. Don't forget, I'm older than you, though, right?
Yeah, but not by a lot. Girl, I had my first cell phone when I was, like, those flip phones.
Yeah.
And I think I had it when I was, like, in grade 6, 7.
Oh, girl.
When normal letters came, you had to do 3 times.
I don't get why companies still do the word in their number for you to remember it. I can't figure that out anymore. You know how they say 1-800-GOTCHA?
Oh, yeah.
And to figure out what gotcha is nowadays, it's impossible. The letters aren't attributed to any of the numbers anymore. On your device.
I didn't know companies still did that.
They still do it. So it's just like, that needs to go.
Number 1 was ABC.
Yeah.
There was no capital, a random cap. So you had to do shift, press it again. And you know what's crazy? I used to be able to text without looking at my phone on those phones. That's insane.
Do they still have keyboard class in high school, do you think?
What's a keyboard class?
You can see, I am older than you.
What is a keyboard class?
Learning computer how to type class? On a keyboard. Yeah.
You mean computer class? Like, to learn how to also do computer, like.
Ours was called keyboard class. It was just about the keyboard. Yeah. 6 months.
No, like, we had computer
or whatever
class.
Semester was.
I think if you took, like, the advanced version, there was coding involved as well. Keyboard class.
Just having this conversation, I'm realizing how behind the time school probably is, because in order for them to keep up with things, back to trash, we hit on a good point here. The further removed you are from something, the less accountability that you have.
The whole idea of sanitization was simply to hide the problem. And only recently, the past 50, 40 years, we're now saying, wow, the problem is so significant. Our land fills got packed with trash. So then we started using water. Now our water is getting trashed. And now everyone's saying, don't do it anymore in the water. Now they're burning trash. And now that's causing pollution.
Yeah, that's interesting because the word sanitization should mean, like, when you sanitize something, you're cleaning it, right?
Yeah, you're not relocating it.
And that, yeah, that's exactly what the sanitization projects did with trash.
Right, even to this day, exactly. We're still kind of, we're not getting rid of garbage 100%. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I haven't done my research.
Yeah, like when I think it's a very North American way to look at trash is like very dirty. I'd be interested to see actually a study on where the most OCD people live. Is it in North America? Is it in Asian cultures? Where is it? Because when I was watching this video of a city in Japan handling their garbage, I thought, oh my gosh, North Americans would never do this. Like, they're just so far removed from garbage. They look at it as dirty. They just want to put it in a trash bin and put it on the curb of their street and be rid of it. Even when we're walking down the street and we have to put something in like a public waste bin, none of us want to touch anything around it. You don't want to touch the handle, anything like that. So I would be interested to see if OCD is more of a cultural phenomenon in North America. I could be wrong, but I think some of those things could go hand.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that.
But regardless, I think our way of processing and sanitizing has created this lack of accountability,
right,
toward making this world a better place. Mm-hmm. And it lends itself to when we're trying to create laws around global warming and all that stuff, people are just so easy to dismiss these things
because it doesn't impact them.
Yeah, it's not my problem.
It does impact them, but it doesn't impact them directly or to the point of their day-to-day life necessarily. And so it's just far removed. I think this kind of applies to a lot of other factors, like even our food. Past few years, there's a big shift in the way we're buying our groceries. Where is our food coming from? Is it coming from like these mass produced chicken farms and beef farms? And there's also a new wave of the idea of us eating that much meat was because back then we were hunting, if there was labor. Now our day-to-day task for most of us is wake up, have coffee, go behind the computer.
It doesn't warrant that kind of diet.
Yeah. So, you know, what does our body need now for the lives we are living now?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's no longer meat and potatoes and the very heavy red meat protein diets.
Just so you can sit on your couch and watch the Love is Blind marathon.
Yeah.
Speaking of couples and men and trash.
Just wrapped into one.
We've come all the way from 500 BC. Talking about removing trash from the streets,
mm-hmm.
a mile away, to now 2024, where a guy breaks our heart and your girlfriends surround you. And the first thing they say is, girl, he is just trash. Forget about him. Just forget about him.
Yeah.
We have a culture of out of sight, out of mind. That's what that word means to us.
Yeah, trash is definitely associated with something that we don't, it's kicked out and we don't deal with it anymore.
Correct.
Definitely. Every time my girlfriends have said that to me about an ex or someone who I recently broke up with, I don't feel very well hearing it. Like it actually doesn't make me feel good or supported or in any way do I feel like, yeah.
Because you don't see him as trash at that point.
But do we ever see them as trash?
Maybe sometimes, yeah. Depends what they've done after the breakup. Depends how hot the next girl is.
Ooh, interesting. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, then you have to somehow put them down.
Question for you. Do you prefer your ex's new girlfriend to be hotter than you or uglier than you?
I think I want her to be uglier. I can't imagine a world in which I want her to be hotter.
If you're going to leave me, do it for someone who's better than me.
Right.
But then I don't know if my ego would appreciate that. But then maybe the reason he was able to get the hotter girl is because he already had you.
when I think about a guy leaving me, I always think she is better than me in some ways. Mm-hmm. Because why else would he have left me? She right. has to be better than me in some ways. And I know that's kind of a weird way of saying it, like better than, but like how else are we going to word it, yeah. right? In that person's mind, they are better than you.
Yeah.
For them, but still, they're better. Let's yeah. be honest. So, yeah, I'm not sure if I want it to be in the looks department. At the end of the day, I'm not attracted to guys who solely go after looks. More often than not, when they find better than, it has to do with
personality.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's the piece I'm usually heartbroken over. Mm. And if they just so happen to be hotter, I know that it doesn't really make a huge difference to them.
I think I have a bomb personality. Like, I'm funny. I'm also like, I love sports. I also can talk about different shit. Like, I'm your multi-purpose girlfriend, right? Like, I can hit up the bar in jeans and a t-shirt, and the next night I can have my Louboutins on with a pretty little skirt and go out. It's hard for me to think that my ex would be with someone who has a better personality than me. Maybe she'll be more humble. maybe she'll be that. But yeah, I think I would want her to be uglier, because then I would also know I have a better personality. See, so then my ego would be fed.
Okay, so
because it comes down to that.
Yeah, does that mean that we have different self-esteem issues? That I have self-esteem issues when it comes to my personality? And you have self-esteem issues when it comes to your looks. Because maybe. Look at how we've both just focused on opposite
different things.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have actually realized as well now that I've become weird insecure about is career. When I feel like my ex's new girlfriend is more successful career-wise than me. And I don't know if it's because I'm just in that kind of mindset at the moment. I'm just like, oh.
Imagine being the ex-girlfriend of George Clooney and the next girl was Amal Clooney.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. She just has everything.
She has everything. But then maybe it's a good thing, because then you're just like, I give up. It's just done.
George is, I think, one of those classic cases of it just had to be the right time.
At the time yeah. that he was willing to put the work and the yes. effort. And but maybe that applies to all of us. Maybe the people we are meant to end up with and the people we're meant to share the rest of our lives with require us to be at a certain point in our lives.
When you finally stop making that damn mistake with men that you keep making over and over and over.
What's the biggest mistake you think you make?
I keep choosing men that don't really.
And full stop. I keep choosing men. That's my biggest mistake.
I keep choosing men that don't really love me as a person. Mm-hmm. And I know it. The signs are there early on.
Right. And you just choose to.
I fully choose to just feel how I feel about them and just focus on that. And then I just think, oh, they'll see me eventually.
Right.
And they never do. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. I would say my biggest mistake is I'm very short-sighted when it comes to men. And I think it's because when I'm generally, when I go out, I have a good time. Like, I'm on a date and I'm like, this was so much fun. Like, I had a great time. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, that means he's good for me. But I don't associate with like the long-term goals. And
you don't think about your own future with him?
Not until it gets to a point where I'm like, shit,
you're a dude.
This is gone. Like, I'm on my 10th date and I gotta tell him I can't date him anymore. Right.
That's more of a guy way of dating.
I don't know. I don't think so. You think so?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No.
They don't think about the future until it's the 10th, 15th day.
Then no, like, I think do. I think guys do think about it.
I guess the only guy I've ever dated is you.
I think guys do. Most of my guy friends who are in serious relationships, they've always said within the second, third date, they knew that this person was it.
So maybe you attract the opposite that I do. We both attract our opposite.
I attract more commitment.
Yeah.
See, maybe because I'm so nonchalant.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. And then when they come hard at me, I get commitment.
Right. One of the concepts that kept coming up when I was researching trash was the modern attempt to undo the landfills that we have established and just keep growing.
Right.
Is sustainability.
Yeah.
And so when I hear you talk about what you're looking for in a man, I approach it a little bit differently. Like, I approach it as, will I like this person, first off? And then, is this person able to grow with me in a sustainable way? Is this passion that we already have upon first meeting, is he capable of growing this with me in a sustainable way? I think a lot of people try to find that man with the quality of sustainability first.
Right.
And then they look for compatibility.
Right.
But
right.
I just can't operate that way. And I understand probably I'm doing it wrong. Maybe I should do it the other way. But I can't find interest in simply sustainability. I can only find interest in my interest in a man.
Right. But don't you think through the conversation of sustainability, compatibility is also found? So like, for example, when you're on a first date with someone and you talk about, oh, you just watched an F1 documentary and they're also excited about it. And then they say, oh, I actually wanted to go see it last year. And then just through very organic conversation, you discover that they have this passion or this zest for it. It's something that we could potentially have in common, and it's something that we can grow together on.
See, my mind goes deeper than that. My mind goes to, is he excited on the first date to bring me to the next F1 race? I feel like that's a red flag. Already talking about taking me on vacations, first date.
Oh, 100%.
That's not a sustainable person.
No, right? I'm not saying with you guys, but I'm just saying for him to have the mentality or already have a certain way of thinking and being that is reflective of you. You're living very parallel lives.
But how do you detect sustainability when you're first meeting someone? Because how many times have you been misled in the beginning stages of dating with a guy that's
very true,
a love bomber, or
that's very true.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like my more recent experiences have been the guys are one way, and they're always talking about, oh yeah, I'd be up for doing that, and they're very adventurous and exciting. And then when things get a little bit more comfortable, they just kind of stop.
Mm-hmm.
The effort just kind of stops. Mm-hmm. So then that takes me back to, then that's not who they are to begin with, because that would come naturally to you, right?
I think so many people are able to fake engagements for weeks, for months.
Months, yeah.
I cannot do that.
Dude, just be you.
Just be you. I don't get it. I don't get why people or how people are able to put on this facade for so long.
Oh,
that must be exhausting.
Exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. And if your thing is beer and pizza and genuinely you like doing this couple nights a week, our first date should be beer and pizza.
Yes.
And
1,000%.
Because that is you. Take me to exactly what your life is, two, three times a week. That's how you do things. Take me to that. Let me get a glimpse of that.
No, herein lies the issue with people, though. It's a security thing. They aren't secure with themselves. They aren't proud of that side of themselves. They haven't owned the fact that they're lazy in certain areas.
Okay.
Which doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Yeah.
And then the person who suffers is the person you're going after.
Right. So, and I agree with that. I do. I think that that definitely exists in our society. It's also the culture that women have created a bit the last few years of dating. How many times you go on social media and it's, he was going to take me to Starbucks for a first date. He was going to take me here for a first date. And if it's not like a 5-star restaurant or this like fancy meal and all that stuff, our culture is enforcing a very luxury first date experience. Otherwise, he's not worth it.
A lot of women are mistakenly equating actual investment from a man with monetary investment in them. So they're equating he is invested in me as a person with he is putting down an investment on this dinner date.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not an investment in me unless he is taking me seriously and taking me out to an actual mm-hmm. dinner.
Right.
I don't agree with that line of thinking at all.
If that is genuinely who you are as a man and your life, your day-to-day life entails certain types of restaurants or certain type of lifestyle, do that. That's fine.
Yeah. If you're a foodie, be a foodie.
Yeah. If you're a foodie, be a foodie. If you like five-star restaurants, do that. I'm not saying don't do that, because just as much as we're saying be you, the guy can't act casual if he's not casual, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
If he's not a sports bar guy, he's never going to be that guy.
Yeah.
Women also need to stop putting that luxury date as the only option. Because what's happening is men who maybe aren't into that type of life or can't afford it, or they're just literally doing it just to get dates, after a while, they can't, it's not sustainable.
People have a hard time understanding what real connection actually means.
Mm-hmm.
They have a hard time setting that boundary and establishing it right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And I think in part it's because a lot of people don't want to recognize that it's very difficult to get a good connection. So they kind of put it out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, well, I'll just, as long as I can just get a man to treat me well, and as long as he has these elements and all of these things, then we can make something work.
Right.
Then again, this comes back to my point of this is why I look for interest in a person first, and then I look for the sustainable quality second.
Yeah. See, I for me, it has to be parallel. Like, they literally have to go hand in hand, because my interest in you is also linked to, I'm talking about my romantic interest in you. Let me be clear, because I can be friends with someone and their interests are very different than mine. But I'm like, no, this is a really good person and we can be friends and we can disagree on certain things, but we can continue having a friendship. I'm talking about my romantic interest has to align with me liking the person. If you hate sports, but you're a good guy, you're a nice guy, you're genuinely a really, really sweet guy, but you hate sports and I love sports. I like you. I like you as a man. I like you as a guy. But what do I do? If he doesn't like any kind of sports as a man, does this also reflect on, you know, his competitiveness? Does it also impact like his teamwork, his friends group, his way of my brain just goes somewhere else.
These are very surface level interests. When I talk about interests, I am talking about my interest in the person themselves, meaning they are a person who's very self-reflective.
Yeah, they are a person who has a sense of humor. These questions and these interests are some of the first things you start noticing about how deeper. You don't know if someone is self-reflective on a first date. To a certain extent, you do. To a certain extent, I think you can pick it up. But people are just so good at words.
Yeah.
Right? Even to the point where most of us have almost mastered certain therapy talks. For me, it's like I'd rather understand you as a human being, like your core, your foundation. And then through conversation, so for example, are you an empathetic person? Oh, we just disagreed on a certain garbage, sanitization. We just disagreed on it. Are you able to have a constructive conversation about it? These are the things that I'm saying, like certain conversations go deeper and you realize, oh, okay, we didn't agree on this, but how did we talk about it?
I think that should be my first question on my next first date. Are you an empathetic person? And please follow up with an example of what you mean by your response. I would love to hear someone try to explain why they are an empathetic person.
I like that, because then you actually even understand if they even know what it means.
Exactly.
From their example.
Yeah.
But what if they give a really good answer and then they're just not?
I think you can tell if they have, right, like a God complex. by the answer to that question based on like how deep that they go with the example.
Or how rehearsed it is. Like,
yep.
Like if they just know exactly what to say.
It can't be surface level. I think an actual self-reflective, self-aware person is going to answer something that's maybe mildly traumatic.
Yeah, but that's also a lot to ask on a first date.
Yeah, but I don't want to be with you if you're not someone who's open.
Is this like a person you just met? Or is this a person that you had like a friendship with or some kind of interaction with? And then...
We had some kind of interaction before this date, yeah.
I wouldn't expect deep, deep, deep.
I do.
Deep, deep, deep on a first date?
Oh, yeah.
Unless... It's like one of those like 5-hour dates and you guys are just like deep in combo. But you can't be sitting in a car.
No, but think about the conversations people have with themselves and their camera on TikTok.
And the privacy of their...
Yeah, but they are self-secure enough to project that out into the world and have those conversations. That person can be sitting next to me on a date.
That's true.
That's not an expectation. That's.
I don't think it's unrealistic. I just think it is. It's a big one to ask.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unrealistic, but I think it's a big one to ask.
Now we know why I'm single. Because it's very hard to find.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to settle. I know what I want. No. And I know that I'm not going to be comfortable with someone who has a lot of closed doors.
Yeah. I'm okay with closed doors in terms of first couple dates. Because I can appreciate and understand that everyone has lived whatever life that they've lived, and opening up often means at your own comfortable pace. And it's not just their job to open up, it's my job to create a safe space for them to open up. And so some people are, I trust you until you show me otherwise, and some people are like, no, show me I can trust you and I will build on it. So depending on who I'm speaking to, I'm okay putting the work to show them that this is a comfortable, trustworthy, safe relationship, but up to a certain point. If we've continued dating for like, I would say a few weeks, and you're still having a hard time showing that doors are slowly being opened, because I can get quite open, and I like very deep, intense connections. I love them, like I crave them. And I know how you are, and I know you're also less forgiving than I am for your time.
Yes.
I can appreciate where you're coming from of like asking really, really intense, almost like interview-like questions.
Yes.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, as bad as I am with the concept of trash, in that once it's out of my hands, I cannot touch it again. I do not follow that in my life at all, like in terms of people.
Yeah. In terms of romantic life, because I think you're quite firm with other relationships, like work,
that's
colleagues.
True.
Like, I think you have very good, healthy boundaries with other aspects of your relationships.
I'm trying to figure out if it's the same part of my brain, but I'm trying to figure out why it is that actual trash is so final to me.
Mm-hmm. All of us.
Well,
like
no,
we
because
throw you, the garbage out and we never go back. Like,
no,
who opens their garbage.
Hoarders. You know how there's some hoarders,
right?
I've become.
Oh my god!
I was just about to say, I'm looking to my left, and there's a whole bunch of furniture and stuff lined up against the wall. I was just about to get on my like pedestal and talk about how
like you're getting rid of
everything. I'm not a hoarder. I'm like an anti-hoarder.
Yeah.
In the last few years. And I think a lot of that had to do with when I was moving quite frequently in my 20s and early 30s. I was moving every year. And every time I moved, it was like exhausting.
Right.
Having to lug around, having to take apart these pieces of furniture. And so I just minimized my life to the point of like actually owning just the things that I need and use on a daily basis, and then just having the amount of furniture that I need to actually do things. It's my pet peeve to own a whole bunch of tables, because I think people just fill tables with stuff. Once you have a surface, you just put things on the surface.
Yeah.
So that whole thing to me is very easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
I get rid of stuff. I have no sentimental connection right. to these things. But when it comes to a person that I invest my interest love in,
yeah.
I, for some reason, cannot let go of it mm-hmm. ever.
It's not like you're like that with people in general. And it's not like you've managed to now be friends with like 4,000 people.
You yeah. just
get rid of them.
Yeah.
But you're only like that with people that you've invested your heart into. Like yeah. your love. Not just your heart, but like your romantic love into.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a therapy session for you mm-hmm. with your therapist.
Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it means I value my heart a lot.
But then why are you letting them come back in?
Well, no,
that's because the thing. Like, I'm asking you because I'm trying to find answers from your experience to.
Well, because them coming back in, it doesn't affect my heart. I value the love I give the most.
Right.
That's what I value. I consider myself to be a very, very sincere lover. And I think that's unique in a world full of people who just...
Whenever I tell people I'm friends with, not all my exes, but most of them, they always say, that's so unhealthy. That's such a weird thing. And I say, well, I have such intense relationships with them. And I'm not talking about just physical, but... Most of my exes, I'm integrated into like really their lives a lot in a sense of like how their families are and like how they grew up and really deep, deep conversations. We connected through so much. When you bond to that level and when you share such deep experiences with one another, I think they continue always seeing me as someone who they can open up to. Even if there's zero romantic like feelings or anything like that left, because it's just easier for them to talk to me. But what does that say about me for letting them continuing to talk to me?
See, selfishly, I'm actually more interested in the opposite end of that. I'm more interested in what does that say about them that they continually go back to you to fill that gap in them and they still haven't found it in someone right. else. Why didn't they end up with you?
Most of them I ended it with them.
Well, there you go.
Because here's the thing. Just because you're able to meet someone's emotional needs, it doesn't mean they're able to meet your emotional needs. I'm a lot deeper than most people I meet. And so what happens is, yes, I'm fulfilling their depth and I'm able to get really deep shit out of them because of how I talk and because of how I interact with them, but they're not able to do the same for me. They're not able to stimulate me emotionally and mentally.
I think you just nailed why I was so hurt by my last relationship, because I thought that I was that depth for him. And to find out that I wasn't is a very harsh mm-hmm. reality.
But what makes you say you weren't?
Well, because he didn't choose me. Because the way you just described it, those men that you left weren't meeting your depth needs, but you were meeting theirs.
But
and
that's
so
why that's yeah, but it could have been other things. You might have been mentally stimulating him, or you might have been emotionally stimulating him, but maybe
yeah, what's maybe left? Things that hurt me. Yeah, it wasn't matching up intellectually. All deep things, right? Mm-hmm. All personality things. It's why it hurts. Anyways, moving on. Trash.
We're gonna go through our contacts today.
I mean, I'm not okay. I already know I'm gonna win at this.
And no, it's not a competition. Fuck's sakes.
I know what your photo album looks like. I know this is not gonna be any kind of like game with my phone. I've got no one.
Right.
No one to clean up.
Contact? Oh god, girl.
Girl, I've already cleaned them up. I do this as I go.
Okay. I wasn't going to say cleaning it up, but what I was going to say is just put the trash emoji next to whoever we think. But you don't even have that.
No, they already gone.
See, you're just better. You're just better. Yeah. You did win. Okay. So basically, you think we're going to be headed into a direction where we're going to have to sort our trash on our own and we're going to have to lug it across the city. Pay for the government to get rid of our trash.
I think we should.
You think we should?
And this is coming from someone who hates touching trash. I think that this is probably the only way we're going to hold ourselves accountable.
Interesting.
Yeah. Right. I hate to say it, but I'm hoping it doesn't get implemented until after I die. Mm-hmm. But
okay, so why don't we...
It's the same thing with like SUVs and trucks and... I've always said like, oh, you want people to stop buying them? And you're trying to incentivize them to buy a smaller car, never going to work. You give people the option, they will take the option that they want. Yeah, you have to stop the manufacturing big cars, period.
Yeah, but you also can't do that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I get it. I'm not trying to run a totalitarian system. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, this is the reality. Yeah. So we need to accept it.
Yeah, I would disagree with the paying for the trash of, like, sorting it out yourself. Because I think technology nowadays is just way too advanced for us to even be at this dilemma. At this point, they need to invest in smart bins where they're programmed of the weight already. So how much each household is allowed to have in terms of weight. It has a smart scanning system. Dude, you have grocery stores where you put your shit in a cart and it knows what's in your cart and you press pay on the cart. Like,
but to your point at the beginning of this podcast, are you not just contributing to the next problem? With technology, whether we not like it or not, is the largest contributing factor into the downfall of society. And so all I'm thinking of with now these smart bins is now you've just created an entire wasteland of all the old bins. And... God knows what with the creation of these devices in some new factory that's going to start pumping out, you're just trying to accommodate our selfish.
No, I'm a firm believer of working smarter, not harder.
But sometimes smarter is the contributor to.
Not always. Not if you're doing it properly and it's not just based on the fact of you being lazy. So, for example, to tackle the problem of the bins, you're right. What's going to happen with all the bins we have? And so I would challenge a company to come up with an additional item that you can attach to the bin. There's ways of going around it to make our society better, more efficient, smarter, and to help everyone. And so... I agree with you. Sometimes it does look like you're taking a step back, but if you look at the longevity of the process, you're actually taking 100 steps forward. Whereas right now, yes, you're solving a problem of assortments, but you're now, inflation is that at its all-time high. You're now going to cause 10 other problems for the citizens and all these people who, one, don't even have the time to drive 2.5 hours, wherever this place is going to be, to sort trash. So guess what's going to happen right away? People are going to find people to pay to do
this.
That's
so true.
Right?
So true.
Right? And then people don't even have sometimes, like, we're running on tight budgets in this city. Like, people are working 80, 90 hours a week in a dual income household just to be able to put a roof over their head. Mm-hmm. And now you want them to pay for their trash that you're forcing us to buy? Like, this will just go down in a spiral and it just won't be good. So I think let's take a step back. Let's see what technologies we have at hand and just figure it out using technology.
This is why you need people of all ages in the cabinets and wherever they're making the decisions, because they're not having these conversations if you don't have people across diversity, age diversity, cultural diversity on your panels. We are all doomed. Is that how we end every podcast now?
What is wrong with that?
To be honest, though, I think that's kind of how every analytical conversation goes these days. We're doomed.
Well, don't say that. I'm already depressed as is. Just like my love life is shit. Now, like, our entire civilization is shit.
Well, you know what, though? I like your plan for the the future of recycling and garbage.
Should we do a proposal and like send it to the city?
And I like your plan for implementing some sustainability chats into dates. So we've got some stepping stones to work with here.
We're moving forward.
We just inserted some jargon, some nice office jargon in there.
Yeah.
Moving forward. We're going to circle back.
We'll circle back to this tomorrow. Oh, dear. All right. Well, you all have a good week.